Welcome to episode 31 of The Overview. I'm Chan Nam V, and look who's back from his wild adventure in China. Jason, what's up, man?
I hate you so much. Who makes a guy, after being gone for 2 weeks, and tries to spend a day with his girlfriend to come on and do an episode?
It's like 9 p.m. or like 10 p.m. too. You know, you're just trying to relax.
Well, we haven't seen you in so long. Do we missed you? You know, and Flame's been on like almost every week. You haven't.
I've been here for 3 weeks. I've been 3 weeks.
Like, yes,
my
Jason's
word.
Gone.
Jason,
fuck that guy.
So
I'll be on the show.
No, yeah. But now they brought you back, and I'm still here. So
exactly. Of course, welcome Jason back. Fishsticks, of course. Hey, what's up, buddy?
Yo.
All right.
Apparently, there's some Sombra stuff going on. I don't know.
Sombra's out. No.
Maybe there is. Maybe there isn't. I don't.
No, everybody
really has no idea.
No, it's that one countdown, that one site that was counting down for counting up, right? I think for a while now, I think hit 100%. But of course, we don't see Sombras. Surprise, surprise. But and Flame too. Welcome to the show, man. Welcome back.
I've been here more than them the past month.
That's true. That's true. He's pretty much like the fourth co-host at this point. So we got lots to talk about today, of course. Our week in Overwatch. Start off with just kind of what we've been doing with Overwatch, playing-wise, and maybe the Brawl. Also, just a bunch of news that's going on, esports news, general news, and then, of course, some esports news, or at least event news. So with APAC, of course, Jason can give us the full lowdown of China and even just the results, as well as OG and Apex still going on right now, and even some possibly bigger news or speculations on some big news from the Korean standpoint with other big, large organizations making some moves. Of course, at the end, we're going to be doing some Q&A, so you can tweet those questions to myself at ChamanV or at The Overview, GG, and we'll read out some of those. If not, you can hang out in Twitch chat, and we'll read some of those too. Okay, guys, so let's start off with our week in Overwatch. maybe we start with Jason. What you been doing in Overwatch, I guess, prior to getting back? Did you get a chance to play at all, like the Halloween patch or whatnot?
Yeah, I played a little bit. I think me, Mitch, Shade, and then the president of Energy were at the LAN cafe. We actually tried the Brawl out. Could only do medium. Couldn't do hard, unfortunately. A couple of players on the team, not going to name anyone. Shade and Brett were kind of making us lack a little bit in firepower that we needed.
Wow.
But no, yeah, we got to, Mitch and I bought some more cases, got to open them up. It was good times. It was also really cool to see the players. They got Chinese accounts that had 2,000 loot boxes on them.
Holy smokes.
And I think none of them actually got through all 2,000. I think AKM was the closest with 180 left.
Wow. That's, I feel like that would take like an hour or like 2 hours of just opening. Or like three, four?
Left it on overnight doing it, and he didn't even get through all the way.
What? I think you can like just hold down spacebar the entire time and it'll eventually go.
Oh man, that's old school macros right there. Put a rock on your
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's spacebar or something else. I don't think you actually have to click anything else.
That's one hell of a YouTube video, man. Opening up 2,000, it'd be like a 24-hour video. Crazy.
That's like Phantom Lord, you know, getting turned on from that kind of thing.
Seriously. Holy crap. Okay, cool. How about you, Ben? I last week you were just getting back from the whole TwitchCon thing, so you get a chance to play a lot more this week?
Yeah, I've been playing a ton. Awesome. I've been playing as much as I possibly can these last couple of days. It's been lots of fun. I'm slowly coming to grips with the fact that I'm a Zarya main. My win ratio
really?
With Zarya is like way better than any of my other heroes. I've been trying to resist it, but I mean, she's too good in every single situation, so.
Wow, that's shocking. You've always played DPS like since I've known you, so that's
I play a little bit of everything, but yeah. Zarya is my best character right now, like by far, it seems.
Well, she's apparently. She's a necessity in a majority of the comps right now, so it's a good one. It's a good one to definitely be good at. Cool. How about you, Flame?
Yeah,
go ahead.
I was going to say, like, you mentioned that she's a necessity, but we'll get to that later.
That's true. Probably that's
not
true.
So
true. Flame, how about you, man? You've been playing or just mostly been analyzing?
I played the Halloween Brawl. I played with a stack for a little while to try to like get the highest score, but it's like such a grind, man. Like one person dies to the Junkrat spam and you're like, come on, man. But I grinded my alt account to like from 3450 to 4100 in one streak, like pretty much playing only Mei. That was pretty fun. Like that was a really hype stream. It was like two nights in a row of just nonstop May on defense and like May on even May on offense. I didn't care what map it was. I was just playing May. It was the dumbest, longest, like just greatest. Like I felt bad for everyone involved. That wasn't
me. You make me sick.
So May OP on the ladders, which is basically
May OP is May is super OP on ladders. You just get someone else on your team to play Zarya, and it's just all right sailing from there, man. Ben
Flame, perfect combo right there. Yeah, good stuff. So Ben, Jason, you guys done the brawl at all? It sounds like Flame has been just like owning the brawl. If you're trying to get high score there.
All right, I'm not going to lie. I played it once, so that's okay. About it.
I love it. I mean, I'm not even going to hide it. Like, I think it's honestly one of the best things in the game right now. I like, not outside, like, the normal modes, but I mean, like, as far as brawls or just in terms of new things that I've seen since, I guess, what, last year? Mm-hmm. Like, this probably, like, shows the amount of potential that the game has, at least just for PvE. Like, even if it's just, like, a casual kind of thing, like...
Yeah,
I find it so much more enjoyable than like playing training bots or even quick play. I think.
Yeah, the only thing that I would say I've been enjoying it too. I just wish I could get XP even when I lose, like you know, just get a little bit. I just feel so bad when.
Do you not get XP for losing?
No, you don't get anything.
Oh my god, that's so sad. Actually, yeah,
it kind of sucks. You only get it winning, so.
I'm the only one that knows that out of us.
I mean, I didn't check. I bought crates, so like I wasn't really too concerned with that too. But that's actually really sad if that's true.
Yeah, yeah. But no, it's definitely been enjoying it. Still trying to get all. I still haven't bought any loot boxes. So, trying to still grind out all those loot boxes and getting everything. The only thing I'm still really wanting is I still haven't gotten the Reinhardt skin, the glowing head one, and the Genji intro. I still really really want. That's about it though.
May highlight intro is probably my favorite. And what was another thing?
Oh, the May one. Yeah, the ghost one. I forgot about that one.
The Reaper looks pretty sick with golden guns as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's like Reaper's a DMX. Good. There's a DMX over, like dubbed over the him coming out of the.
What's the coffin?
The coffin? Casket. Yeah, it's when he really breaks funny. Through it. It's like, it is pretty sweet.
Yeah. I'll have to find it. It's like really good. Someone made some like really funny YouTube clip. Yeah. But, and some of the player icons I think are top tier. I mean, I don't know if anyone really cares about player icons, but some of the player icons.
Which one's your
really
favorite?
Good.
Like, I didn't have any.
Spooky Pachimari, dude. It's like It's like the Pachimari with the sheet over its head.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. I can see that. I can definitely see that. Very cool. Yeah. It just obviously the Halloween event continues on, and we still got a little bit less than 2 weeks left on it, so still plenty of time to get your favorite skins or intros or emotes or whatnot.
I swear though, Blizzard like can print money just like Riot did whenever they release like a new like patch with new skins, like a new seasonal event. Mm-hmm. It's just printing money. It's so crazy the amount of money they must have made off that. Like I know Riot when they released Pulsefire Ezreal. I think it costs them somewhere between like $30,000 and $70,000 to make in terms of like salary of the people who are actually creating it. But they made like off the first day alone over $3 million.
Oh, wow.
Of people buying RP to buy it.
I mean, forget Overwatch for a second. Just like, did you remember like when Pokemon Go came out? Like, did you see the numbers for the amount of money spent? Like, people love microtransactions, man. It's like incredible how much.
I mean, just from the anecdotal sample size of playing ranked games, you look around, everyone's got the skins, everyone's got the taunts. Like, I feel like 50% of the people that I'm playing with have spent $40 plus just on this, campaign right here, right now. I mean, Jason has, right?
I have.
Are you judging me right now?
You're such a sucker, Jason.
It's worth it, dude. I have like 10,000 currency, but I'm never going to spend probably a single gold coin of it.
Until the Christmas skins come out, man.
Oh, God.
Well, that's the smart thing about saving the currency, right? It's like you don't know what's coming out in the future. And if they continue with this 3,000 for a legend, then yeah.
Well, it's like they released the new Reinhardt skin, like the two new Reinhardt skins, not even like in a content patch. And I was like, all right, buy it right away.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay. Well, anyways, that's kind of what we've been doing. I've just been playing too. I mean, I've just basically been playing with my son, and a lot of my Overwatch has been basically doing that, and then with the other group of friends that we're just trying to climb the ladder together. I just can't solo queue anymore. I can't stand solo queuing anymore. So I just don't enjoy it. It's just
yeah. I mean, I did fun. It. So like, I was on my streak, right? This is like one of those like Crimea River stories. But like, I was on that May streak, and I was at 40, not, I was like 40, 90 or something. And like, I was getting like 70 points a win at that point because of like how long the streak was.
That's amazing.
And I get this guy on my team on, we're playing offense on Eichenwald. Like, I was actually so tilted. I just dropped my mouse and keyboard and just like went outside and walked my dog during like midstream. Cause he just picks Symmetra on offense and like won't switch off of it. So then my whole team just is like, all right, this guy's trolling. Let's all troll. And then I get like a Bastion. I got like a Hanzo with 76, no healers. Like, that's what killed my streak, was someone just picking like Symmetra and breaking the morale of everyone else in my team. It was so sad.
And that happens at 4,100. That's great. That's great.
You gotta wonder, how do you get up to 4,100 if you pull shit like this?
I know, right?
Well, I mean, it'll bring you down to like low masters or high masters, I guess, too. But
yeah,
I don't know.
So, like, after experiencing the Korean server and Chinese server, if you want to play ranked, you go there. It's insane. Like, I was at, we were on Smurf accounts at 2,500, and people were playing comps that we needed. Like, if we had one support and we had everything else filled, the last guy would always go support. Oh, like, it was insane the amount of people who were, like, willing to play the roles you need to win, because they all wanted to win.
Right.
And even, like, the was it the Reunited guys or no? Envious guys tweeting saying that ranked in Korea, like, everyone wants to win. It feels like it's a match of CPL every time they play because it's that intense. And then, yeah, I hear dummies
There's
saying, yeah, I'm going to love it.
Chat who know what CPL is right now.
That's true.
I hear dummy like talking, saying everyone wants to go back to North America to play because everyone messes around, even at the highest rate.
Well, if you want to mess around, you should mess around quick.
I mean, there's a guy at 4,000 right now who, like, he has all of his playtime is on Torbjorn. I'm saying, like, literally all of his playtime. You go check his stats, there's just impressive. Zeros.
Well, he's
got to
be pretty damn good. I mean, if that's all he's doing.
But I'm just saying, you get that on your team and you're playing like Anubis offense and it's like, what do I do with this?
So in China, Jason, like, do they talk on comms a lot?
Maybe. Well, I mean, don't know. I mean,
you can hear them.
The
oh my God.
Oh, you didn't join group chat. Okay. Gotcha.
They do recognize the name JCap, apparently. They thought I was Jeff Kaplan. Even
That's awesome.
They're like, because I was playing Mercy one game, and they said like something something Mercy, something something JCap, and
I love
everyone
your game.
Was like, really?
Oh God!
10 firm requests incoming.
That's right. Oh man, awesome. All right, well, why don't we move on to talking about some news here? Mostly esport news, but why don't we start off with some Melty? So a team that we've seen since the very beginning of beta. In fact, one of the best European teams when we first were getting started with tournaments like Ghosty Gamers and whatnot. And they announced this week that they are closing. I think Melty just in general, right, as a team is closing. So not just like the Overwatch team. What do you guys think of this?
Yeah, I mean, Melty's been around for a while. They've participated in a lot of different games over the years. They were never a very big team, though, so it's not a huge surprise. They haven't had a very successful roster in any game over the last couple of years. Overwatch could have been it, and it just didn't happen to pan out. So ultimately not super surprised by this, but still sad to see them go. I mean, they've been around as one of the, you know, one of the orgs in France for a long time. So it's kind of sad.
Mm-hmm. Jason, I know you followed Melty quite a bit over there, right? Like over in EU, ESL.
We did more when it was like they were more relevant in Overwatch, but they kind of haven't been really relevant. Like, we know the players. We were at TakeOver with them back in May. But in terms of, like, the org and stuff, we haven't really – I don't know. We haven't talked. We haven't heard much of them in general. I'm obviously sad to see the org go because it's really cool to have an organization like that invested into Overwatch. But I guess it just wasn't enough for them in general with everything that they had. Like, they had other games. I can't actually remember fully.
CSGO, Street Fighter, I believe.
They were very, like
– they had a CSGO team?
At some point, I think they did.
Always underground teams that were like kind of not the top tier, like maybe B.
Because they always like push for nationalism, right? Like they wanted like all French rosters.
French,
I feel like
right.
Most of their it was like they were like making Olympic teams for like all these different esports instead of trying to make, I guess, like internationally culminated rosters. Like I know for a fact that their Overwatch team was all French, right? Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep, they were.
Yeah, and I think that. Like, same sentiment kind of went across most of their games. So, I mean, you're not going to have much success, I guess, in general doing that, but...
Unless you're Sweden.
Yeah.
Unless you're Sweden.
Yeah. Or China coming up.
Or China or Korea, right? Yeah, so it's kind of sad. It's always sad to see a team close, of course. But well, we have another team that's actually signing an Overwatch, or at least an organization signing an Overwatch team, which is Denial. And I actually don't know too much. I mean, I've definitely heard of Denial, but I don't know too much about them. So I don't know. You guys know a lot about this organization?
Primarily based out of in Call of Duty, as far as I know. Denial's actually been around for probably 4 or 5 years. They've had successful Call of Duty teams, and it's just another org jumping into the Overwatch scene. You will notice, though, not a lot of the names are super recognizable. We were looking through the roster earlier, and we spotted out DeHun, who we've seen play for a number of rosters over the last 6 months or so. But not many other people on this team. I'll just run through it. We've got Jolson, ZZA, Endless, Godhand, DeHun, and XQC. Close to QXC, not quite the
that's
same.
Right, that's right.
Yeah, so cool to see another big org jumping into the scene, but I have no idea how well they're going to be able to do, as they have, like, most of these players really don't. Actually, Flame, I'd pass it to you. Do you recognize any of these guys?
Yeah, they're like, I mean, some of them are NA ladder players, I guess, or like ranked players. Jolson is a old TF2 player from like way back, maybe like 2008, 2009. He was really good. I don't remember what he played. That was like right when I started playing. He was someone, I know Godhand from somewhere. I don't know if it's Twitter or something, but I know for a fact I see Zot and Endless a lot on the ladder. And XQC is like known for his tank play and his questionably angry attitude on ladder. But I mean, this team could, that's like the nice way to put it, but we'll see how this team does. I mean, Dylan's good. Jolson's definitely good. And if you put enough good pub players together, I think it can work out really well, actually, in this like state of the game. Because, I mean, we could talk about it later, but I feel like some of the teams are having issues now, like being able to play multiple heroes. So if you can get a bunch of good players and different heroes, you can definitely get success in this game. So, I mean, it's definitely good. This org is huge, too. Like, I'm looking at their sponsors now on the Team Liquid Wikipedia, and they have, like, Razer backing them and DX Racer. Like, that's getting Razer to sponsor an org is, like, pretty rough, I think, even now. So they have to have some good backing, I would say.
So I think the fact that we're also not really talking about that it's a team made up of, I guess, just top 500 players is huge. We saw, what was it, KYB, Joiner United, as like the first real pull from the top 500 talent pool. And he performed so damn well, at least in Genji back in the Atlantic Showdown. Obviously, he's left since then, but we haven't seen many teams and many orgs pick up unknowns. And we haven't really been able to see too far into the depth of what the pool of top 500 players have. I think it's awesome. I think it's really cool to see finally an organization like Denial pick up a team like this. I mean, obviously they're known as Q question mark before or Q, but the fact that three of us only recognize a couple of the names, and Flame, well, knows them a lot, obviously a lot better than we do, is a really good sign of, I guess, what can be out there.
Yeah,
the talent that can come out.
Yeah, and I guess to go off that statement, I feel like a lot of the tournaments have locked a lot of the rosters. You know, like E-League locked rosters for teams, and then before that ESL locked rosters, and now there's teams like in Korea and China playing. So there hasn't been a lot of swaps, but now that we're seeing a lot of swaps, we might actually see more swaps, right? Because BlizzCon's coming up, so there's going to be like a good 2 weeks, 3 weeks of no tournaments. So we might see more roster shakeups. So like a team that, I mean, it's a good time now to be making a new team, I guess is what I'm trying to say, because I feel like a lot of the competition is going to start shaking up their rosters too. So it'll like semi-level out the playing field for at least the like second tier, like low one tier teams.
You think any of the top teams or organizations will try to snag guys like these, you know, like top 500 guys that haven't gotten much publicity or whatnot? Or do you think it's still going to be consist of people that we all have heard about or played on different other teams before?
I mean, there's definitely players that are on tier two teams that could definitely play on tier one teams. Mm-hmm. They just aren't on the tier one teams. And I would say that there's probably tier one teams that aren't happy with their results currently that might look towards the ladder to find more people, because there's some crazy ladder players. I mean, you'll find some people that solo queue up to like number 10 or something. I mean, you can do it. It's not easy, but if you're flexible enough right now, I think that it's a good time to be looking for a team and just in your ability to swap.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we'll have to check out to see how Denial does in their first tournaments that we see after this.
Yeah, I think they lost against in MGA against Team Liquid 02, according to Liquipedia.
Oh, did they?
But the fact that they made it that far is like pretty good sign. To actually make it into like the regional finals, it's pretty damn good.
Okay, next bit of news is, it's not necessarily Overwatch related. It's more so SC2 related, but there's some speculation as for it being Overwatch. The reasoning is because Overwatch. And that's, Kespa is dropping StarCraft 2, which is kind of crazy. So Kespa, for those of you that don't know, is a Korean organization that's been, the Kespa Pro League has been like the league for StarCraft 2, or StarCraft, Brood War, just the long history of Korean esports, and them dropping StarCraft is crazy, like, is historic, actually, in a way. And there's speculation, Monte Cristo, particularly with his tweet, was speculating that it has mostly to do with Overwatch. I want to get what your thoughts are on that. Fishstick?
Oh, my God. This was, in one way, not a big surprise, but also I wasn't ready for this. So the news broke. Yeah, I mean, the news broke really recently, and this is one of the last possible, bastions for StarCraft II in Korea. Mm-hmm. You know, Blizzard is going to keep supporting the game, I'm sure. They keep supporting Heroes, even though they're not getting a ton of viewership on that stuff. So I'm sure they're going to keep supporting StarCraft II, and there will be some Korean StarCraft pros who keep playing and fighting for that, for the money and the championships and the honor and all that. But really, Pro League has been a foundation of esports in general for the last 14 years. Mm-hmm. It was one of Kespa's first big initiatives. It's been running for well over a decade. And to see it go, to see it die, the team tournament format is really, really sad as an esports fan, and particularly as a StarCraft fan. I wonder how much Monte Cristo's tweet is accurate here, that they're folding this in particular because they want to focus more of their resources and effort on Overwatch, or if it was just an inevitable thing to come because, honestly, StarCraft II just has been doing worse and worse and worse recently, as much as it pains me to say that as someone who loves watching StarCraft. But I was not ready for this. This totally blindsided me. Mm-hmm. It's kind of hard to overstate the gravity of this situation to somebody that may not have followed StarCraft II or esports over the last couple of decades. But I mean, this is something, like you said it right, Chris. I mean, this is a historic moment in esports to see such a legendary foundation just disappear is absolutely crazy. And five of the Kespa teams as well disbanded. So will those players even have salaries? Will they have a career? What are they going to do? I mean, a lot of these players are living nearly in poverty situations. If they're not winning the tournaments, they're not getting paid a lot. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I guess the silver lining is hopefully what Monte Cristo says could be true. Hopefully the team owners and the sponsors and the organizations are looking to shift their focus to Overwatch, which would at least give some kind of silver lining here. But man, it's really sad. It's like a super sad moment in esports.
Yeah, it's definitely a gut punch to StarCraft 2, and you know, well, you know, me and you, Ben, definitely come from the StarCraft 2 community, so, or at least have been, you know, part of the StarCraft 2 community. So it is really surprising and shocking that this is happening, and it will be interesting to see what happens to StarCraft 2 after it. Jason, what do you think?
So I mean, I'm going to be honest, I don't really know a whole lot about Kespa and its dealings within Korea. I obviously know they're like heavily invested in StarCraft, but I guess I can talk about, since I don't know their past and stuff, what the potential is like good for the future of Overwatch. Mm-hmm. It kind of makes me sad to be a Westerner, because rip ever winning any tournaments again when you get Korean teams playing again. Like, so heavily and invested and, you know, supported in terms of like having a proper practice regimen and practice area and salaries, and like, that's going to be scary. But that's such a good sign for Overwatch in general. I think it's very sad that obviously StarCraft has been on such a downward spiral. Actually, I don't know a lot about StarCraft in terms of the actual game. I played it before, but I love watching it. And I'm going to be sad to maybe not see it as much anymore. But the prospects of having even more organizations invested in Overwatch really excites me. So it's a good and a bad thing for me.
Yeah, and Kespa is one of the biggest if not the biggest organization in Korea. And so Overwatch on TV over there, I mean, there's definitely a huge potential if they do get into Overwatch for just even more exposure and growth for Overwatch. Flame, how about you? Like, how much did you, were you in the StarCraft 2 scene too for a little bit, right? Like,
I never played, no? But I would watch a lot of it. When I was like in high school even, or when I first got into college, we were like, oh, you never heard of Kestrel? You never watched GSL before? I'm like, right. And then I started watching it and I would like stay up forever watching StarCraft. But I don't know. I mean, it's all speculation, right? Like, all the only news is that they dropped their SC2 squads, not that like anything has to do with Overwatch. But I did read a post, I think, I don't know if it was on Reddit or what, but it was about like how it might just be a power move from Kespa to like try to force Blizzard's hand into like letting them control the Overwatch Korean scene. In the sense that like, oh, we'll threaten to like drop esports or Blizzard esports in general or something if they don't let them control some form of Overwatch. Really? So I mean, that's a cool take on it. I mean, I don't know the validity of it, but I was just thinking of it from that standpoint. It kind of makes sense, but because I know Kespa has like a huge infrastructure, like as far as how the Koreans practice and like the team settings and like all of the venues and whatever, like it's just very well thought out and plays out pretty well. But I mean, if that's true, then that's true. But if they are going to move to Overwatch, then yeah, the Westerners are going to have to start preparing and starting to take this game a little bit more seriously, because they will figure out ult timings a lot better, and they will figure out hero switches a lot better, and everything will start becoming very calculated, more so than it is right now.
It just means more teams, you know. More, I mean, Kespa in itself is just an organization. It's not like all of a sudden something, you know, brand new happens and all these Korean teams are even more structured or whatnot. It's just more teams will be coming and obviously have all those cool or great practice regiments and whatnot brought to the Overwatch.
Great
space.
Is a relative term, I guess. In terms of regiments, hearing StarCraft players training for 18 hours a day, sleeping for six. There we go. Math on air. Sleeping for 6 hours. Like, that's some pretty insane stuff. Like, I don't know if I could ever do that. That's just crazy, the amount they practice. But then also to do it as a team is even going to be harder.
That's true. That's definitely true. I mean, the efficient practice for teams is much different thing. And I mean, that's the biggest difference, right? It comes down to equation with just time, practice time, right? And the Koreans, I feel like, will always have more of it than the, you know, just the Westerners. It's quality of life too, right? So
the good news is, I guess, from my perspective, is that it's not a MOBA, it's not an RTS. You don't learn how to aim overnight. Like 30 hours of aiming is not going to teach you how to aim. So I think we got a little bit more time than normal, but we'll see if it even like touches Overwatch, you know, like if it winds up being Overwatch related at all. But I expect it to be. I think OGN has like, or Kespa has stake in OGN, or OGN, like there's some relationship there. I think. I don't know the whole who owns who, but it could be good.
All right, well, why don't we move on to some esports events? Before we do so, I just want to remind you guys that we are on iTunes for all of you that enjoy listening to the podcast on audio, as well as Google Podcast and some of the other things like Stitcher, just other apps or podcast apps. So you can check us out there. And if you do enjoy the show, I encourage you to leave a 5-star review, because it helps people find us when they try to find Overwatch podcasts. Okay, so esports events. APAC. All right, this is the big event that obviously Jason and Mitchie were casting, and Jason was in China for a month, right? Like a full month?
2 weeks.
Oh, it's only 2 weeks?
It might have felt like a month, but 2 weeks.
Well, it felt like 3 years.
Yeah, exactly. So 2 weeks, and you know, definitely the event was fantastic to watch. I mean, the production looked awesome. You guys were amazing casting too. So I'll just have you kind of lead us in, and how was the overall experience in China?
I want to start with this real quick, because it's a pretty insane number. The first 4 days of casting, we casted for 32 hours, over 32 hours. That's like insane.
That is crazy.
Yeah. That's like a normal work day.
Yeah.
Wow.
But just straight casting, though.
You know what I mean? I'm just throwing it out there, man.
No, but casting straight for 8 hours.
I'm saying if it was like over 32.
So you can't. You can't relate.
It's
like,
I know.
An hour of regular work. No, it was so much casting, but it was so worth it. Like, we loved every moment of it. We might have been tired as hell when we got home, but hey, we had the time to sleep and time to get ready for the next show. It was amazing. So, in general, Banana Culture was fantastic. Like, the guys actually put on the whole event. They were great to us. They took care of, made sure we had shuttles to go to the event and back every time. The staff was fantastic as well, being up till 4 a.m. helping teams. If, like, someone woke up and wanted bubble tea, well, one of the people from staff would be up and able to order it for you. Like, that's how good they were.
How many times did you do that?
I hope you're serious.
How many times did you do that, Jason?
I'm serious, but I didn't do that, no.
Okay, okay.
It's 4 a.m. I was sleeping. I was passed the hell out.
Okay.
And where else to go from there? Yeah, we had clothes for us, like the vests and ties and shirts. Like, that was actually a fitted shirt. We gave them measurements. I've never had that my 4 years of working in esports.
That's fancy.
Yeah, it was really super fancy.
I'm really jealous.
Jason
now.
Wearing a tie. Wow, that's a verse.
The thing is, like, when you cast, like, when you feel good, like, you're going to cast well. Like, if you're uncomfortable in any way, it kind of affects you. So we were, like, completely taken care of. Had food delivered to us at every time. The food we had there was amazing. Even the chicken feet and jellyfish I ate was actually good.
That's good.
Everything about the event was amazing. Then also the fact that we got to hang out with Energy, because Mitch and I have never actually met them, because we weren't at Overwatch Open and they didn't qualify for Atlantic Showdown. Mm-hmm. So we got to actually meet them and talk to them. I touched Siegel's butt like 1,000 times. Wow. And then I got to hang out with Rogue again. And since we've been to almost every offline event they've actually participated at, it was good to catch up with them again. And then also, for the most part, learn about the Chinese and Korean teams and Japanese teams that we've never really seen. The Chinese teams, like, really dedicated, really hardworking, still have a lot of problems when it comes to, like, compositions and hero pools, which I'm sure Flame can easily talk about, like, not being able to actually have a depth in terms of that. The Korean teams, like, they're like, oh, we hung out with Lunatic High the last day after we finished the finals, and they were so nice. Like, it was Ruge Hong and Toby, the two support players for them, like, telling Tevik in, like, broken English, but it was, you could still understand what they were saying, that Tevik's, like, the best Genji in the world. The best Genji they've ever played against. Mm-hmm. But they were such cool guys, and, like, everyone was getting along, all having drinks together. Just all in all, it was the best event I've ever been to. It was such a good time. Like, obviously, it's hard being away from, well, Germany, or just being away from what you know for 2 weeks, but mm-hmm. every moment was totally worth it.
How are the crowds there? Because I heard from Shade and some other folks that, I mean, it was wild. Like, the people were getting some people, especially, like, Siegel was getting mobbed by people as they were leaving the venue and stuff.
he got
was crazy.
Kind of. So there was, like, these metal barriers to hold people back when he mm-hmm. went to go leave somewhere, and apparently they all jumped it. And by they, I mean, like, all women jumped it and chased him down and chased, like, the entire in the audience. I don't know if it really came across on air, but it was 70-80% women.
What?
What?
Yeah. 70-80% women.
That's crazy.
What the hell?
It's a female demographic in China. Holy crap.
Well, that's the thing. We learned about the Chinese scene past the actual teams. We learned about China and esports. And one of the people from Banana Culture was talking to us on the way there. And she was saying to us that China doesn't really, they're not really into sports, like traditional sports, basketball, mm-hmm. baseball, football, whatever. They're into esports. So one thing that we never learn or know about as, like, the Westerners is the pressure that's put onto the teams. And Mitch and I really talked about the entire event, how any team could beat any team. It seemed it was like rock, paper, scissors. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that's due to the pressure that's put onto the players, because the amount of people in China playing, like, to give you an idea, the Chinese stream had 2.5 or 2.3 million viewers in the finals, like, concurrent, is what we're told. So even if you divide that by 10, even if you go by that rule, which people always say, that's still 250,000 people plus the 25,000 we had on Twitch or whatever. There's a lot of pressure on the players. If you don't perform, if you don't play well, teams disband. Black Anonymous, they came through their open qualifiers. They went into groups. There were 6-0 in groups, and they lost in their both qualifying matches. And that was, like, the team to beat, because the players were having problems within each other, actually. Like, person A wanted to call, and person B didn't want to listen, and person C wanted to call something different. And there's so much pressure compared to the Western world, from what I know, I guess, when it comes to that kind of stuff. But it was such a good experience. Like, I'm so happy we went. I'm really happy that we won.
And another thing that may not be immediately obvious about this situation, if you haven't been following esports for a while, is usually Chinese events are complete shit shows that fall apart, and the broadcast is terrible, and there's lag, and there's production issues. So that's actually great to hear. So hats off to Banana Culture for bucking that trend.
That was their first event.
That's crazy.
Like, and they're like a startup company.
Even as a spectator, it was one of the most well-produced events we've had to date in Overwatch. I mean, obviously, E-League set the bar, but APEC was right there. And in some aspects, it was better. And like the stage looked, you know, obviously it was more live. And there was more of a live audience there, you know, versus like E-League.
Right.
So that aspect of it was actually even better. So yeah, his first production, amazing.
And I can say that I know a lot of people complained about the Twitch stream going down. A lot of that was due to, well, in China, there's a giant firewall that they have. It's called the Great Firewall, like the Great Wall of China. And you have to have like VPNs to even use Twitter there or to use like Facebook and stuff like that. So they actually had to like route from Shanghai to Hong Kong and then like Hong Kong to Twitch. And the problem is that Hong Kong was getting DDoSed on their ingest servers, which is why the stream kept going up and down. But the final day was a lot cleaner because we actually sent it out to South Korea, I think it was. And from what we're told, or like what the assumption was, that the Chinese government was actually DDoSing Hong Kong.
Because of that broadcast.
Because because Hong Kong's, it's technically a part of China, but it's its own like country as well. Mm-hmm. They don't follow like all the rules and laws that China has. So the Chinese government, which is communist, is like kind of against Hong Kong. So that's what we assume, because we were on holidays like in China until the day the problem started happening on Twitch or with the stream. So not even Twitch's fault at all. It's just completely the ingest servers getting effed over.
Okay. All right. Well, why don't we talk about some of the results? You know, definitely one of the things going into the tournament was seeing how NRG and Rogue, or at least seeing how the Chinese and the Korean teams measure up to NRG and Rogue. And right off the bat, we were pretty shocked to see Lunatic High beat Rogue, and not only once, they beat them twice. In the group stages. Actually, once in the group stages, and then once. Or are they both in the group stages, actually? I forget what the second one was, where in the tournament the second one was. But
yeah, Rogue lost to Lunatic High twice in groups.
Twice in groups, that's what it was. Yeah.
The way the format was is that you do the initial two matches, then winners play winners, and the winner of the winner's match has a one-map lead coming into the final match of the day. Then the losers versus losers, and if you win the losers versus losers, you're guaranteed to go through into the wild card as like a minimum of a third place. Mm-hmm. Then the losers from the winners and the winners from the losers play against each other. Then the winner of that game plays in the final winner's match. Yeah, it's really confusing. But yeah, so they played them twice and they lost both times, actually. They beat them on Dorado, but they lost on King's Row and they lost on Route 66. And a little bit of insight for people wondering, the second time they played against them, it was actually a mess up by one of the players on the team. I don't know who it is, but Tavik was being interviewed after the fifth match and he normally does the vetoes for the maps and he was going to veto out Route 66. But the person who actually did it messed up and didn't veto it out and they got picked again.
Oh, wow.
So that's why Rogue kind of said they lost the second time. First time, they just underestimated them.
It's like messing up the coin flip. That's crazy.
Yeah, when I watched it, I was like, why are they playing 66 again? Like, what is this?
Flame, I know you ended up reviewing... you reviewed the Grand Finals, obviously, and you reviewed... I know you reviewed the first one. Did you review the second match? Or the second match?
I reviewed... I think it was like Dorado 66. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there was a third map. I know I did that set. King's Row. But yeah, maybe it was King's Row.
Yeah. So what did you notice in all three of them? Like, what was the difference, especially in the Grand Finals?
Rogue looked really, like, bad, I guess, the first series. And then, like, the second series was just, like, a completely different team. It was bizarre. I mean, I don't know how early in the week or what the time was or, like, what the time frame was even on that whole thing. But the Anna patch, I think, came in for the first series, maybe, and then it was there for the... Like, it wasn't there for the first series, and then it was there for the second series. But they looked completely different. Both teams looked completely different, to be honest with you. I don't know. Lunatic High looked really strong in the first series with like the King's Road Dorado set. Like, but Rogue looked really lost, I would say. And then in the Grand Finals, it looked like they just like turned on, like everyone just flipped a switch and became like great players again. Like, I would have started questioning roster shakeups after the first series, but then the Grand Finals, it was like convincing. It wasn't even a close match, in my opinion. Like,
the groups, from what they told us, the initial match. Actually, even both matches, they played comps they didn't want to play for some reason. Like, they had counters ready to go against Lunatic High, because I think they played him earlier in the week, but then they just didn't do it. They didn't switch heroes when they should have so many times, and then there were some... I don't arguments isn't the right word, because that's, like, too negative, but there was just, like, some discussion within the team of whether they're playing certain heroes at certain points. Like, ACAM on Route 66 didn't want to play Reaper, but the team wanted to play Reaper on defense. He wanted to play like McCree, and then into the final day when they met them again, when they actually went into quarterfinals instead, actually the playoffs, they talked and they said, okay, AKM, if you want to play McCree, play McCree. It's fine. We'll play around you. So they were actually allowed to play a lot of different heroes that they wanted to, that were more comfortable with. Instead of trying to fit the meta, they were playing with what they were really good at. As we saw, like, Tevic playing Genji. You saw Azmei again come out quite a few times. As Hanzo, oh, God, as Hanzo in the quarterfinals on King's Row, or on Hollywood. If you guys didn't see that, you have to fucking watch that. He got a 4K entering, but it was the most ridiculous shots. But they were finally playing, like, the rogue we knew. Like, playing heroes that they're good at instead of playing a meta, necessarily.
Yeah, I feel like Lunatic High, like,
turned around.
Yeah. I feel like Lunatic High, on the, like, to flip that, though, like, went from being able to, like, execute their comp to just, like, not having an answer. But I guess what you're saying, too, like, I don't know how much you want to go into the in-depth into this match, but they didn't have any, like, when he played Pharah on that King's Row match, I think that was, like, the turning point of that series where they just, like, felt, like, helpless. Like, he switches to Pharah, suddenly their May, like, Eska's playing, Meska, like, was their McCree player the entire tournament, and then he's on May, and then suddenly they're off DPS. I think it's Ryu Zhang or
Li Taizhen
is, like, trying to play McCree now, and then Tevic just, like, slams him. Like, there's no other way to put it. Like, he's playing Pharah against McCree, and he's winning the 1v1s against McCree. So then suddenly Tevic is doing whatever he wants, and, like, at that moment you could see them, like, break, because he switched off McCree, and then Eska got off the Mei, but the Mei was, like, doing so much work. And then Eska wound up playing McCree, and, like, you could actually just watch the comp on the side of Lunatic High just, like, start to devolve because Tevic was just, like, putting so much pressure on them as Pharah or Genji or whatever he was playing.
Yeah, the problem, I remember that specific part you're mentioning, too, where Li Taizhen went McCree, and we were all like, why the hell is he doing that? I think it's because Eska had, like, a Blizzard at the time.
Yeah, exactly.
And they
didn't want
to get rid of that ultimate by switching into McCree, and then they end up swapping anyways, but it was just, like, too late. The momentum was there.
But, like, Tevic comes into last on King's Row and, like, hits a conk and, like, knocks the Reinhardt into the pit for free.
Yep.
Like, at that point, you're just like, guys, hello? Like, they played really well, though, and I felt like they had, like, Lunatic High had no response. Like, the entire series, like, they were trying so hard to get nano-boosted Reaper comps, but they had an answer for it every single time. Like, AKM played McCree. Reinforce actually hit some ridiculous Arch Shatters and charges on, I think it was, like, Nepal.
The charge onto Mutation on the Reaper being nano boosted on Sanctum. Oh,
yeah. Like, they clutched. So, like, they all just played insanely well. But they had no answer to the Genji. They had no answer to the Pharah. And then on the Hollywood match, like, it was such a one-sided match that I think that after that was over, it was like, okay, guys, I don't know what's going on anymore at that point.
Yeah, Lunatic didn't even, I don't think they even played it, actually, from, like, the map info that we had. They didn't even touch it once. But I want to give credit, though, to Lunatic High on the three player, Miro and
Miro's awesome. Yeah.
So Dummy and even Rogue said Miro is probably the best Winston they've ever played against, because this guy is just insane. He does not die. Like, Dummy and the entire energy were saying to us, they just can't kill him. Like, they tried so many times in so many different ways, and they just cannot kill this monkey because of the way that he worked with Ru Zhehong. And then Ru Zhehong, Dummy said that's the best Ana he's ever played against. He said, like, I think it was Dehang was, like, the only ever Ana that really gave him problems. Like, he would notice in a game, but Ru Zhehong was by far way better.
Yeah, I watched it was, like, the Nepal series. They were playing Winston, and they had no Zarya. Like, and he was still just—he just never died. And, like, he made, like, some crazy play. I remember he, like, jumped up straight in the air, got, like, five people to look at him, and then while they're all looking at him, like, a Nano Booster Reaper just comes in and kills everything on the floor. It was insane. It was, like, the silliest, but it was just, like, you could tell that he had executed it in his head, and that, like, he had a plan the entire time. Like, it was. Yeah, it was really cool to watch. But yeah, Miro and even his Zarya was really good, but he didn't get to play it that much, I felt, throughout the series.
Early on, actually, we saw his Zarya, like, in the first rounds, which was fantastic too.
From a meta perspective, it seems like there's a couple talking points coming out of this tournament, or at least the finals, the grand finals, one of which is Zarya. I mean, Zarya is, like, one of the most picked heroes over the last couple of months, probably the most picked alongside Lucio. And in the grand finals, neither team was really relying on Zarya a ton. You know, we saw neither offense or defense running with Zarya. And in my mind, like, you don't run a Winston without a Zarya to pop that barrier on him. But, you know, apparently not essential to team comps. I mean, what do you guys think?
On that note, they ran on, like, the Koth maps, they would run, like, Winston Reinhardt, which is, like, super crazy, tank mode. Yeah. And a lot of teams will, like, I know, generally speaking, Wins doesn't like playing Winston, it seems. Like, at least when I watch their matches, he doesn't like being the Winston. So, like, they'll switch their tank player, they'll switch Reinforce from, like, Reinhardt to Winston. But on the side of Lunatic High, they don't ever get off the Reinhardt. They just like keep the Reinhardt and then they switch to the Winston. So like that's interesting to me, but I don't know if it like paid off for them or not, but it's a weird set. I mean, Zarya is just so good, right? Like there's so many ways to die in this game. Yeah, like you can get charged and get
her ultimate
pinned.
Is the, you know, initiator too for team kills.
Yeah.
I remember talking to Devik about Reinhardt and Zarya in particular, and he was telling me, I'm not going to say no, you're wrong, just to Vic. He was saying to me that he actually finds it better as a Reinhardt to never fire strike when there's a Zarya on the enemy team, because the benefit you get off of doing that is nowhere near as great as you get the Zarya. So you give 50 free energy, technically 100 if you can get a double shield off, which means she does a lot more damage and builds up ult percent for your, was it 7% or 8% you get for per person hitting with a fire strike? Yeah, like a great Earthshaker can come through, but a Ground to Surge is so much more reliable. So I wonder if he actually told Reinforce to like stop flame striking as much to feed over Miro. But then again, like Miro's Winston, as we saw on Koth, was just unkillable. The way he did it too, he would jump onto the roofs and slide on the roofs to actually have his jump pack cooldown quicker before he engages. So like he actually would be able to always jump out, and him and Ru Jehong were coordinating to just spam heal him whenever he did go super deep. But in terms of like meta, even on Koth, we saw a ton of McCree. Like to deal with Tracers, Lee Tayshian had an impossible task going up against AKM.
Yeah, I questioned that too. I was like, why when you're going up against AKM, one of like the best aimers in the game, arguably, do you think that it's like, why would you go for the Tracer? Like it's such a hard, you're like giving yourself such low odds of winning that matchup. Like it was insane. But
and then we didn't even see Genji Tracer. Like, unless it was out of AF Blue, who like had Arhan and Recry doing it, because they wanted to have that like stable McCree, I guess, to like even protect the supports.
Yeah, prevalence of McCree, another big talking point. I mean, Korea in general just seems to be picking McCree all the time, but then we actually saw McCree picks coming out of Rogue in the grand finals quite frequently as well. And obviously, we know AKM is one of the best McCrees on the planet, but if you look at the trend over the last month or so, like McCree had been picked less and less and less. And all of a sudden, Rocket's back in the meta.
Well, one thing I think that would have been cool. I mean, I just wanted to see the clash, I guess. I would have wanted, in like retrospect, like Misfits or Nip to have been there, just because like I want to see how they deal with the three tank or the four tank now that Nip's running. They're running like Mei, Zarya, Reinhardt, Winston, I think, or Roadhog instead of Winston, or like just the Nip. Consistent 3-3 with the Mei Reaper Zarya, because they both play those so well, and I would have wanted to see how like they clash with the Korean and Chinese meta. But like I guess back to what you were saying about the McCree coming back, like Rogue was never a team that really wanted to run the 3-3 tank or like the 4-2 tank comps or even the Mei Reaper Zarya comps. Like they looked uncomfortable on it when they tried to beat they lost to Misfits in E-League like semifinals. So like I wanted to see those comps clash, but I think on paper, just the ability for Rogue to have a way better hero pool. I mean, even just Tvik having a really deep hero pool wound up just being the difference maker for them.
And even Tvik did play like Reaper and McCree.
Yeah.
Like they actually flexed him around quite a bit. I think he played probably one of the most heroes out of anyone.
If you don't want AKM on McCree, I mean or Tracer, like just keep him on those heroes. And, like,
yeah. It's really situational dependent. I can't remember exactly because I remember seeing like Tivik was like on McCree once, but I think it was because AKM had like 50% on his ult already, so they didn't want to lose that 50% ult generation. I'm not 100% sure. I can't remember.
Yeah, Tivik's just incredible, actually, with the amount of characters that he plays and the
his
level
Pharaoh,
of play.
Like
it's insane.
The fluidity in the air was amazing. And like on King's Row on defense, I think it was, or his offense, where he 1v1 Ru Jehong on the Ana, who was actually boosted up by Mei with the payload to get onto the high ground in the Foundry. That was such a clutch 1v1.
Yo, I was just like thinking to myself, like how fluid or just like how consistent he must be at, just in general at like playing that hero, because I don't think that he's busted out Pharaoh throughout that tournament. So like he just comes in on it and like, yeah, he had like three or four direct rockets on that Ana. And I was like, what is going on right now? Like how? Like
he was doing it in scrims.
Playing really well, yeah. He was playing.
I saw the Land Cafe and he was playing a lot of Pharaoh actually too. So maybe it was just like a hidden thing he was trying to keep.
Yeah.
All right. So I guess the big question, and it was the question going into the tournament, is, I mean, how did Rogan? I mean, Rogue obviously ended up winning the tournament, but you know, overall they did lose. If you're talking about just series in a series of best of three series to Lunatic High, how did we measure up? Is Rogue still the best team in that tournament, or was it just like a good day for Rogue in the grand finals?
So what Dummy said to me was that, no, it was Enigma. He was talking about that either team could have won. Mm-hmm. It just comes down to who shows up that day to play.
Yeah.
I think Rogue is still technically better than Lunatic High, but for the fact of Lunatic High not having much international experience to kind of push Rogue that far. I mean, the scoreline was 4-1, but it's still a lot of close games, a lot of close plays. It actually could have gone either way. Is a good sign for them. But I know, yeah, Rogue definitely. I want to see Energy play Lunatic High a little bit more, though. I'm a little sad it was a best of five that was like kind of over really quickly.
Mm-hmm. What about you guys? What do you think, Flame?
I mean, yeah. I mean, to what Enigma or what Enigma would say, like the volatility of the games sometimes are like very. It is. It really comes down to who turns on that day or who comes in big that day. Like the Numbani match was the only one that Rogue lost, and they could have easily won. Like 100%, like that was their game to win. And I think that they like messed up their second. They had like an overtime push and they just like botched it or whatever. But it does come down to which team plays better on like the certain day. But I think they like exploited Lunatic High's weakness, because on the first set, I don't remember Lunatic High really doing anything crazy. Like I don't remember a Genji. I don't remember a Mei doing anything incredible. And I remember Eska's McCree doing really well. But then the next day, like when they come back for the grand finals, they're like, okay, we'll just run Genji at you. We'll run, like they stopped trying to play the E-League meta and they started trying to adapt to like counter the Koreans, I guess, better, or the Chinese teams better. So I don't know, I would say Rogue looked way too convincing in the finals for there to be like a dispute.
Good question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I don't know, Apex is still going on, so yeah, we'll see what happens over there.
Yeah, why don't we move on to Apex since you brought it up? OG and Apex is like midway through right now, or maybe not even midway. And you know, first week was pretty crazy, right? We saw Reunited just, you know, getting just losing 0-3 to one of the Korean teams. But I feel like, you know, NVS coming out, we were waiting for NVS to get a chance to play, and so far they've been pretty convincing. I mean, their last one particularly. I feel like they only gave up that one game just because they were trying something completely different, which I've never seen them try with the comp that they were using. But overall, what do you guys think, Fishsticks, Apex?
I haven't been able to watch enough, unfortunately. I did watch the Envious game, or 98% of it, most of it, mm-hmm. from last night. It was pretty entertaining. Envious actually, you know, had a run for their money, but did end up winning there. So. Yeah, I mean, we talked about it last week as well, but the same exact story for OG and Apex as APAC. The production value is absolutely through the roof, crazy, banana, insane.
Yeah.
So really awesome to see just another super high quality tournament, and looking forward to seeing how this thing shakes out. There's a couple more teams, obviously, of Envious in this one, so a couple more Western teams. But we have a ways to go until this thing ends, right? At least a little while.
Like 6 weeks or something.
It's still a while. I mean, they're there for 12 weeks, so I don't even know if we've reached the halfway point yet.
I think it was like 8-2 for Blizz, or 6-2 for BlizzCon or something.
Yeah. Did you actually think that match last night was that close? I mean, I know the fourth one was pretty tight. But the first
they lost Full Sky pretty convincingly. But
they were trying something totally different.
It's like, Volskaya as well.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, that's true. But the first two maps were like, I felt like Envious won very convincingly.
I mean, Dorado was pretty damn close. Like they barely won Dorado, and those. I mean, I guess Tailspin was sticking to Pharah for quite a bit longer than maybe he should have at points. But I mean, Envious won. It wasn't like the closest game in the world, but. They're still getting a run for their money. And it's not Lunatic High. It's additional Korean teams that are playing at this high level.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Any thoughts, Flame, on Apex?
I mean, yeah, I watched what I watched. I watched the Reunited match. That was their first. I mean, people were like, oh my God, Reunited got 3-0'd. Game, the Koreans are here. Everyone's out, like, packing up Western teams. But, like, they switched, who was it? They switched Onigod in for Kib, and then they switched. Who's their off tank player now, or they're off DPS. Oh my God, why is his name? They switched
unfixed
someone's role.
Taja.
No, unfixed. No, they switched unfixed to DPS. So now they switched Kid. Like, they had two role swaps, so people were, like, hyping up that match. But Rogue, not Rogue, Reunited seems like they figured it out recently. I mean, the first match was bad, but that was the first match with a new roster on, like, LAN. That guy, that was that Kid's first LAN, I think. So,
Yeah, Onigod was a DPS player, I remember, I think, for Team Norway. World Cup.
Yep.
Yeah, he had big shoes to fill, I guess, was the thing. Even Unfixed has big shoes to fill now because he has to take up Kid's role. But that one match, that was the match with Haxel Genji, and everyone was like, oh, my God, this kid's the best Genji in the world. But, like, I watched that match, and, like, Reunited just never had an answer to Genji. Like, there was just nothing on their comp that could even kill a Genji. So it was, like, kind of like they're running this unkillable Genji into a comp that actually just can't kill a Genji. So it was... it was convincing, but it wasn't in my head, I guess. I don't know if people picked up on that. I didn't watch the cast.
No, you're right,
from
though.
The
English cast. But they were running, like, I don't know, a nano-boosted Genji at, like, a Tracer, no McCree, no Reinhardt, and no Winston. Like, it's just absolutely no stuns. Like, it's gonna work, and if it doesn't, then, like, someone messed up. But they seem to have picked it up as the tournament went on. And back to Envy, they ran a beta comp. Like, I remember in closed beta, people would run King's Row 76 instead of another healer. And they would run, like, Roadhog. It was, like, Roadhog 76. You would run Mercy, because Mercy got res in, like, 5-10 seconds back then. But
on which map?
They ran it, and it worked on, I don't know which match it was, but I know that they ran a King's Row single healer 76 with Harry Hook on DPS.
Yeah, yeah.
And they, like, full held a team. Right? And, like, that was one of those things where you look at it, and you start saying to yourself, like, maybe that's how you beat the Koreans and the Chinese teams, just by running unorthodox stuff. Because if they don't practice against crazy stuff like that, like, are they going to have an answer to crazy stuff like that? There's a lot of really cool things you can do in this game just with comps, and I think Envious has been doing a lot more experimenting than some of the other teams, at least in that tournament.
I'll give you the Koreans. The Chinese, I don't know if I agree with, just because, like, the Chinese would pick the comps that they see played, but they wouldn't know how to use it. They'd be like, okay, so we run 3 tanks, we run Ana, and we could also run 2 supports, or just 2, or 3 supports total, or just 2, and then be like, all right, why aren't we winning?
Like, well, that's how I felt about Lunatic High, though, in that final set. Like, they were running Ana, but the best nano boost target they had was, like, a Winston half the time.
Yeah.
And I was like, why are you running Ana? Like, just run a Zenyatta if you think that this is, like, how you want to play the game.
Yeah.
But I think that there's a lot of teams in that weird bubble right now where the meta is shifting, and it's shifting pretty fast. Like, it went from 3 tank, 3 support before E-League to nano boosted Reapers at E-League to now we're seeing nano boosted Genjis at APAC. To now, Apex has probably nano-boosted Genjis, Reapers. I mean, but people are getting smarter about Earth Shatters now to counter nano-boost. And then the Maze are coming out to freeze the nano-boost. Cool. There's so much going on in the game right now. I mean, it's all Ana all the time, but there's a lot of... I like that. I like seeing that, and I think that some teams are realizing, like, oh, this is really strong now, but are we good at it? Like, can we be good at it? Stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's cool. I think it's exciting time, at least, and seeing the different... metas colliding and how people are adjusting and if they can. But why don't we move on? We still got one more thing to talk about event wise and then we'll do some Q&A, just maybe one or two questions. Ben, you want to talk about Rise Nation recently and some of the results?
Yeah, I don't know if any of us actually got a chance to watch these games, but was just poking through Liquipedia and saw pretty nice result for Rise Nation, a team that made a name for themselves during the Overwatch Open qualifiers and then got picked up by Rise like the next day. Or actually, it was the day before, so Rise had, like, a good Spidey sense on that. They haven't had a lot of good results since then, but very recently, in the MSI Americas qualifier, they were able to beat both Cloud9 and Team Liquid, according to Liquipedia, which is a very impressive result, especially considering, you know, FaZe was also in this bracket. Team Liquid had beaten FaZe earlier on in the tournament. And Cloud9's been playing very well with their new roster recently, so... we didn't get a chance to catch the games, unfortunately, but just definitely wanted to give a nod to Rise Nation for their performance and their qualification for the MSI Americas. Yeah, right. Pretty good stuff.
Yeah, that's definitely
good. That team was good. Well. I mean, that team is consistently just good. Mm-hmm. They did well at E-League, I remember. They had a deep run. They went to E-League. That's a big deal. C9's new roster... good. I don't actually know if it's still together. There were, like, rumors of it already having split up, but...
Oh, you mean the tryout team? It wasn't official, right? It was just...
No. I just heard that there's already, like, some shakeups in their tryout rosters. So, them beating C9, I'm not sold on, like... I mean, it's impressive, but I'm not sold on it. But the Team Liquid win is definitely crazy, in my opinion. I would expect Team Liquid to win that matchup, especially after Liquid had beaten FaZe. But FaZe is so streaky sometimes, or just like inconsistent. Like on some days, FaZe looks like one of the best teams in North America, and then other days you're like, FaZe, hello. So it might have been one of those days, but no,
Ryze
is definitely good.
Tuizi is like a very hit and miss player.
Well, I mean, like, he winds up in these weird situations where he's playing at like 5 o'clock in the morning his time because the tournament goes until 12 o'clock Eastern, and he's in Benelux, and and then Shadowburn's, I think, like Eastern Europe. Which is even, I mean, that's far, like, but that whole team on land is good, but yeah, you wind up in situations where maybe the time zones hurt them a lot harder, and, like, players aren't
like a Fnatic, IDDQD, and Vonafil. It's rough.
Yeah, it's definitely hard, but I feel like it affects FaZe more so than Fnatic. Yeah, I mean, IDDQD is a machine.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to put that.
Well, the more the merrier. It's definitely good to have even more teams just be in the mix here. And
yeah, I want Ryze to keep playing this well, though. Like,
yeah.
Because this team has so much talent, and they have like some of the happiest faces I've ever seen in Overwatch.
Yeah,
right? They have like Xe on their team. They have, or is that it's actually
yeah,
team?
It's actually
team, and then they have Xretzi, like. They're just like a happy bunch of kids. Like, I don't know. I want that team to do well.
That's rare these days, too, man.
I really want that team to do well.
Getting along with each other and everything. Okay, well, why don't we go into some Q&A here? I know, Ben, you've got a little bit of a time limit today. So we'll take some questions. If you want your questions read, or at least highest priority in your questions, go ahead and tweet those to me, at ChamMV. If not, go ahead and type them out in Twitch chat, and we'll read some out here. We'll take two. We'll see how much time we have. Let's see.
I can add a question.
In this dead air, I'm just going to point out the fact that all the Sombra stuff that just ticked down live during the show has over 45,000 people on the Overwatch subreddit right now. So people are in a frenzy. Sorry, we don't have the answers for you, Twitch chat. So your non-Sombra related questions, please give them to us.
We're just being strong, man. Totally getting strong along.
12,891 comments on that announcement.
Yeah, also, I just for funsies, I was looking at our all on Reddit, and the top post on all of Reddit right now is an impassioned request to Blizzard, never do this again when you're releasing a hero. Because me, like, I'm not following every moment of ARG. It's just kind of entertaining. I like it. But I guess for the people that have been, like, trying to decipher everything, this has been a hellish couple of months.
Yeah, I mean, because it's just one of those where there's no intermediate payouts, you know what I mean? It's just, like, literally a clue to a clue, or a clue that's open-ended. I think it's got 11,000 upvotes. I know. Well, I mean, that tells you how popular it was.
That's only 80% upvoted. Like, that could be higher.
I know, it could be higher for sure. Okay, so Heron453 has a question. If there's one match to watch from APAC, what series would you recommend?
Jason?
Depends, actually. It depends what kind of game you're looking for. If you want to see the old, no, actually that's really bad. I was gonna say, if you want to see like the ultimate like fail, look at NJ versus Allstrike, any of those games, because Allstrike just never adapted and never changed things. No, but best series? I think it had to be the finals. That was probably like one of the, actually, no. Rogue AF Blue was really good too in the quarterfinals. That was probably a really one of the best matchups as well. Like them versus AF Blue or them versus Nutakai were probably the best. If you want to see a really long series, go watch Snake versus Allstrike in the wildcard match, where we played Hollywood three full times with the overtimes. Mitch and I were so done after that game to have to fully play the map three times.
And even rough. In the finals, dude, double Numbani is like, you don't realize how long that takes. Like,
yeah.
You get to the second, and then that's like you have four rounds, like four attempts to push.
All right, go ahead.
Do a best of seven. Just, you know, a best of seven, but to start off the whole thing with a double replay of the body is just like, what the hell are you going to do? We were worried we're in for a really long day.
Dude, I'm having flashbacks to Brink. Oh, God. It's like double full holds on the first point, like replay the same map four times.
Oh man, that's brutal. This is Acer. All right, he has a question. Do you guys think the general viewership numbers are a success at this point? It seems really low if you consider the player numbers. Maybe people simply don't like Overwatch esports in general. Opinions.
I have a whole lot of opinions. I think it's still so early in the game's life cycle. Like, it's really easy to kind of forget that the game's only been out for 5 months. Actually, less than 5 months. It's been out for less than a half a year. And most games don't explode as esports right off the bat. That said, I am a little bit surprised with how low viewership numbers have been. You know, Jason will corroborate this. Before Gamescom, I'm saying 150K for this tournament. I was expecting to hit 150K with all the top teams there.
Wow.
I think we hit 90K in the end, so like pretty damn good for the first major tournament in the game's history. But I think this is more of a symptom of the fact that everything is so disjointed and disorganized. And we talked about this a little bit last week, but you know, having a tournament in Korea and in China, and here's one in America, and here's one in Germany, and some teams are in this one, but some teams are not in this one. But, you know, it just gets really confusing and difficult to follow, especially with the Asian tournaments also being at a weird time zone. Definitely doesn't help for viewership. You know, Overwatch Open Grand Finals was at a terrible time zone to watch for European fans. So there's a whole slew of like small reasons why I think the viewership hasn't been as big as it could have been in theory. But even still, I'm a little bit surprised considering that over 15 million people have played this game on PC. I think they said 20 million people total around the globe, unique people have played Overwatch, and it's made it one of the best selling PC games of all time, the second best selling PC game of all time. Given that context, I would expect it to be one of the biggest esports eventually.
Yeah, eventually.
I thought it was going to pick up a little bit quicker than it has, especially considering how massive the viewership was in the first couple of months. But yeah, I'm not going to throw my hands in the air and freak out. I think we're still doing good. Still getting 25, 30, 40K viewers for the major tournament finals this early in the game's life cycle is good. But ultimately, I did think viewership would be a little bit bigger. I'll be honest.
I think also a lot of the complaints I've seen about it is that people don't know that these tournaments are happening, which, I mean, to exactly, us, that's like, are you serious? Like, it's pretty obvious that it's happening. But to people who are, like, casual viewers, they don't necessarily know. I think, you know, someone in the chat just mentioned it, like an in-game notification or in-game stream. Like, for instance, Counter-Strike, the stream's literally embedded in the home screen of Counter-Strike when you open the client.
Right.
Like, that would drive so many more people to actually watch in the streams. And help get the word out there more.
Just even know about Overwatch esports. Exactly. I think a lot of people just still don't even know that there's competitive, you know, pro level Overwatch going on right now. We're a very small minority. I mean, I don't even know what percentage it is. I bet it's like 1%, like something probably incredibly small. I mean,
10% would be 1.5 million. 1% would be 150,000. Yeah, so there's your 150,000 number. So all we need to do is get 1% of the player base tuning in, and we'll be very good if we can get that for major tournaments. But yeah, I mean, the game is still difficult to watch. You know, we've talked this topic to death, but we still need stats. We still need all these things. Blizzard has been I'm just responding to some things I'm seeing in chat right now. Blizzard has promoted a lot of the major tournaments in the game's launcher, but that's very, very, very different than putting the stream front and center in the game client itself, which Dota 2 and CS:GO do.
Yeah.
And I believe League of Legends does quite a bit as well. So yeah, I mean, we have a pretty long way to go, definitely.
I mean, it's gonna get there. Like, I'm not worried at all.
Yeah.
I think it's more about like just time needed.
The UI needs an overhaul. I mean, they redid the menus, but that home screen in Overwatch, I can't wait until it's like actually like incredibly good.
Yeah,
and like, compared to CS:GO's or Dota's, where like you go to you launch the game and it's like, oh, right now most viewed match or like top tournament on. They're like, buy a ticket to this, you know, sell your tickets, all that stuff. That's really good.
And there's even streams in CS like promoted on the right hand side.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And we're not counting any of the Asian viewers too. I mean, like Jason said, we had like 2.5 million people watching the Apex.
Supposedly,
tournament.
Yes.
Yeah, supposedly. But Twitch wise, the numbers are definitely a little bit low.
One thing I would say though is that the individual player streams have been doing incredibly well. And actually, I feel like those have been doing even better than I would have expected, whereas the major tournaments haven't been. And one thing I don't think we talked about much last week, or maybe we touched on it, I can't remember, but the in-game leaderboard being right there. When you go to play a ranked game, there's a little button for leaderboard, and you can see the top ranked people in your region. It's right in your face. It's like smacking in the face with this info. And I've noticed that people who are top 10 SR in the world or in their region, they're getting 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 concurrent viewers, and even brand new streamers who like had no history of getting a lot of viewership in the past. So I do think that this is a really good sign and shows that people want to watch and want to consume super high level gameplay. But I just think the pro scene is really hard to follow for the average person.
Team ranked.
Yeah.
Get some team ranked in there. And then you can see like, oh, these teams are really good. Oh, yeah. Let's go watch one of their matches.
Absolutely. Seagull giving everybody a chance here, being over in Korea and not streaming. So definitely got to take that opportunity. Okay. Well, why don't we wrap up? It's a great show. Why don't we do some shout outs? Flame, you want any shout outs you want to do, and where can people find you?
You find me on Twitter. You find me on Twitch. Twitch is obviously /Flame. Twitter is Matt Rod with a 0 instead of an O. And my YouTube is Flame617. I guess shout outs to my stream viewers and Monty, because Monty actually like hit me with a really huge host at the end of Overview.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
Oversight, and I was Oversight rather.
Yeah.
And then suddenly like 3,000 people are in my chat watching me do VOD reviews of the APAC finals. So like it wound up working out because that was right after I had lost that Icon Vault match with the offensive Symmetra. So, you know, you trade a bad for a good. But I don't know. I guess shout out to them too, Monty and Thorin, because I never watched their... Like, I don't really follow CS. I've seen Thorin before, and I always, like, knew him as, like, this really brash, like, kind of harsh kind of guy that, like, would say whatever was on his mind, didn't care what was in his way in terms of speaking. But
that would be accurate.
And I'd never seen Monty before. Like, I never followed League. I've never watched League in my life. Like, I've actually just never been a League player or viewer. So, seeing him for the first time after he hosted me was, like, kind of cool because he seems so, like, chill and just, like, a nice dude. And then on the other side, Thorin's, like, personality, like, was completely less controversial, I guess, because he's not on an analyst desk talking to the rest of Room on Fire. So seeing those two clash was, like, really cool to me, and I thought it was a really good segment that the two of them did. So shout out to them for knocking that one out of the park. Like, it was professional. It had its flame. It had its, like, they hit a lot of topics, and they weren't afraid to speak their minds. So, like, it was definitely nice.
I mean, they've been doing Summoner's Insight for forever now, and so they have really good chemistry, and their angle that they approach things, you know, it's more from it's very, very analytical, and you know, it's
raw.
Raw and it's thinking. So absolutely, it's great seeing them coming into Overwatch space and doing it, and they're going to be doing it full out. I mean, I think Monty's done with League of Legends, I believe. So Overwatch, I think, is going to be it's going to be the new community, you know, which he does all his content with, and Thorin too. So really, really great seeing them. The more the merrier, man. You know, it's just like the more we can get esports shows and content and whatnot, I think that can only help out, you know, Overwatch and help grow this esport, esport community at a faster rate. Jason, how about you, man? Shout outs. Where can people find you?
The same shout-outs normally I usually do. To my parents for allowing me to do this, for yourself for letting me focus on Overwatch, to Banana Culture for bringing us out there, and to a special someone, you know who you are, for helping us get actually to go to China. So thanks for that.
All right. Fish Sticks?
Cool. Good show. Lots to talk about, and lots coming up in the next couple of weeks with the World Cup and OGN continuing to progress. I think there's going to be a few more Alienware monthly melees or something like that coming up in the not too distant future, so there'll be some good tournaments to cover. But as always, just keep tuning in, keep watching competitive Overwatch, keep supporting the scene. We'll see you on the R competitive Overwatch subreddit. That's where we actually discuss the esports side of things, so head on over there if you're interested in that more so than potentially other things. And you can follow me at Fish Sticks, and we'll see you next week.
Yeah, and just want to thank you guys for Flame, Jason, and Fishix for doing the show with me this week, and for everybody else that are tuning in today. One thing, I'm trying to get together an overview. I still need to talk to some of these guys to do an overview at BlizzCon. So hopefully we'll get a chance to see some of you guys at BlizzCon, and we can, you know, maybe do a live show because we've never done one. Actually, I've never done any of my shows live, so this might be a first time ever. We seem to have a broadcasting setup that we can possibly use.
So really?
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about that if we can get together. So I'll have to talk to you guys about it.
Some camera phones?
It's not camera phones. Okay, so it's definitely
like
much
CP's
more
Gamescom interviews.
Oh my gosh. Seriously? They were camera
phone
interviews?
I think they had an issue with their camera. So it was like vertical cell phone camera video interviews.
Selfie sticks and stuff.
Okay. Can I give another shout out real quick?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, shout out to Rubicon for giving me, he just randomly messaged me and offered me his +1 BlizzCon ticket.
That's right.
I don't know if I guys told you guys this last week, but he was like, I need to get rid of this. And I was like, awesome. He just gave it to
so
me.
So nice.
So I will be
you
there.
Have to give him anything back for the plus
no, one? I hope not. There might be some fly. I mean, obviously, I'm going to buy him dinner when I'm there, but yeah. In terms of any, like, favors, I don't think so.
No, that's awesome. The BlizzCon tickets are not, I mean, they're super hard to get, and then they're not even cheap either. So that's awesome of him. Lastly, I do want to promote, or just give a quick promo of a show I'm coming out this week. It's something I've been working on with Vindexis on the side for months now, and I'm really excited to get a chance to finally do it. And we're going to start it in the Overwatch space. It's called Streamer Showdown. So it's a game show I'm going to be doing, and ZP is going to be hosting the first one, and Stir, Poke, and Harbly are going to be my first contestants on it. So that's going to be on my channel, twitch.tv/ChamanV, on Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern. And it's just a fun game show. It's not like crazy hardcore stuff like this. It's just more along the lines of Jeopardy and Hollywood Game Nights, that sort of game show. So definitely check that out if you got time to. But that's going to be it for the overview. Oh, you can catch the VODs at youtube.com/ChamanV a little bit later tonight because of that early thing. Again, where we had to restart XSplit, I have to do some editing. So it'll be a little bit later. And of course, the audio is tomorrow. But that's going to be it, guys. So for Flame, Jason Kaplan, Fishsticks, and myself, ChamanV, we'll see you next time. Later.